Welcome to Friend of Maryland. My name is Kat Pause, and this is a fat-friendly space. Today on Friend of Maryland, I talk about the newly released 2008-2009 New Zealand Adult Nutrition Survey. I share a call for papers for a new fat-positive anthology, and I chat with Linda Finn about the impact of fat stigma on kids. I also spotlight a blog from Melissa McEwen from Shakesville. There's a new report from the New Zealand Ministry of Health. The report presents the findings from the 2008-2009 New Zealand Adult Nutrition Survey. The way the media is reporting the results in this report is that New Zealanders are eating less but getting fatter. And of course, everyone is scratching their heads. How can this be? What is going on? I'm sure the media is simply reporting a press release that they've received from the Ministry of Health, but it would be really great if they actually went and read the report. If they bothered to do that, they would find that the report does state that there's been an increase in mean body mass index in New Zealand from 1997 to 2008-2009. The mean BMI for people in New Zealand in 1997 was 26.2. And the mean BMI for people in New Zealand in the 2008-2009 data for this report is 27.6. The report also refers back to the 2006-2007 New Zealand Health Survey for further information on obesity. Luckily, I'm quite aware and familiar with this particular report, as it's what I use when I give my presentations and argue that obesity rates in New Zealand leveled off almost a decade ago. In the New Zealand Health Survey, they do look at time trends and mean BMI across children and adults. They report that in 1997, the mean BMI in New Zealand adults was 26.2, increasing to 26.9 in 2002 and 27.4 in 2006-2007. Now, a mean is not necessarily the best measure of average to use in the relationship of the body mass index, but it is often the one that is cited from these documents. The New Zealand Health Survey also reports on the percentages of adults living in New Zealand who fall into the overweight and obese categories. The report concludes that while the prevalence of obesity for men and women did increase after 1997, it concludes that there was no statistically significant increase from 2002, which in other words basically means that obesity rates leveled off in New Zealand almost a decade ago. And in fact, according to the New Zealand Health Survey, they actually leveled off for Maori adults in 1997. So unfortunately, the media cover of this new nutrition report has been very much off the mark. It's not that we're eating less and getting fatter. We're not getting fatter. And in fact, we haven't really been getting fatter in the last decade. And anyone who's puzzled while we might be eating less but still remaining fat, of course, is making the assumption that fat people consume more calories or eat more than non-fat people. The literature on this is relatively clear that that simply isn't the case. That isn't what we find. I would have loved to have seen if the New Zealand Adult Nutrition Survey had done some statistical analysis. They have the demographic information, they have the BMI information, and they have the information as to what people were eating. I would love to see what their data would show if they tried to discover whether or not there was a nutritional or caloric difference between the different BMI levels. Moving away from government reports and the inaccurate ways they're portrayed in the media, I am extremely excited to share with you now a call for papers for a new fat-positive anthology. This is being put together by Virgi Tovar, and the deadline for submissions is December 31st, 2011, so there's plenty of time for anyone who's interested to put a submission in. From the call for papers, quote, "Submissions are sought for a fat-positive anthology about stories of fattyhood, life, love, dating, work, family, fashion, fatchin, and more. I'm seeking fierce, sassy, thoughtful, authentic, nonfiction, previously unpublished autobiographical stories from fatties who identify as women. The vision for this anthology is one of fun, unapologetic fat celebration and love. In short, fatties, tell me your story. What you know, what you've learned, your tips for navigating the world, your stories and experiences, and don't leave out the juicy parts. Because I want to cover a lot of ground in this anthology, each submission should incorporate your body love story, how you learn to love your body in a society that says fat or bad, fat is bad, and or a focus on a theme. Relevant themes include, but are definitely not limited to, how you create a fat-friendly wardrobe or fashion tips, why you love or hate the word fat, how you create fat positive spaces in your life, how you talk to family and friends about being a fatty, dating, sexuality, and romantic relationships, the way that you turn society's rules into your own personal politic, performance, such as fat belly dancing, particular moments or experiences that impacted the ways you think and feel about your body, the people and communities that make you feel fabulous, the role that your fierce fatness plays into your friendships or family relationships. And don't feel limited by this list of suggestions, please. Please send electronic submissions as a Word document format to fatpauseanthology@gmail.com. That's fatpauseanthology@gmail.com. Fergie asked that you include a short bio and your contact information in the body of the email. And again, submissions are due on December 31st. A recent piece from Big Liberty has really got me thinking. The piece is entitled, Say It, Obesity Equals Obese People. In this piece, the author considers the impact that language has and that the language that we use is powerful. The author talks about how when we use words like obesity or the obesity epidemic, what we're talking about are fat people, and yet that's so often lost. When we talk about getting rid of obesity, we're really talking about getting rid of fat people. The author of this piece issues a challenge to their readers, and I'd like to extend that challenge to the listeners of the show. So I offer you this challenge. Every time you hear a news item or a politician or someone you're having a conversation with use the word obesity or the phrase obesity epidemic or the epidemic of obesity, replace those words with fat people or fat children or just fatties. So, for example, the war on obesity becomes the war on fat people. And a presidential initiative to rid us of childhood obesity is really a presidential initiative to rid us of fat children. Now, I can appreciate that there would be some people that would say, absolutely, we want to get rid of fat people. We want to get rid of the fat children. We want to make them into non-fat people and non-fat children, if, of course, that's even possible, which, if we look at the research and the empirical evidence, doesn't really seem to be so. But the language is important, and the way that we talk about things matters. So I offer you that challenge. Every time you hear the word obesity, replace it with fat people or fat kids or fat adults or your fat friend or your fat mom or your fat family member. Joining me today is Linda Flynn, the author of Largely Happy and Healthy Kids, Happy Kids. Linda, thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you for having me.
Well, it's so nice to chat with someone else who's living here in Aotearoa, New Zealand.
Mm-hmm.
That's fantastic. There's a few of us, I know, kind of located in pockets.
Oh, yes. I think there's probably quite a good move towards size acceptance and knowing that you can be healthy at any size in New Zealand.
Well, and that's fantastic. I'm actually hoping to put on like a fat studies conference at Massey next year.
Ooh.
So we'll definitely have to make sure that we get you down.
Great. <laughs> So
what we wanted to talk about today was the concern about the impact that fat hatred has on kids, on children.
Yes, indeed. Well, it's not just the very obvious things like bigger kids being bullied at school. I mean, we know that happens. And even though New Zealand schools have a policy of zero tolerance towards bullying, first of all, you've got to catch it.
Right.
And then you've got to understand that it's not just physical bullying. It can be mental bullying as well. I mean, it could be the nicknames that children call one another and the things that they say. I mean, fairly typical are things... things such as that kids will steal a child's lunch and throw it away and stuff like that and sit next to it and criticize what it's eating. There's all sorts of things like that. But the biggest thing for me is that the fat hatred which is directed at children affects them so severely that almost every child who is subject to this goes on to have quite severe mental problems. Very few of them can really get around it. I'm not saying that they become mentally ill. I'm talking about anger, frustration, depression, the resentment, the feeling that nothing is fair, that when you're trying your hardest and it's still not working, that you're seen as substandard, that you're seen as lesser than. And I think it's probably up to the parents to counteract this message all the time. Give their children, their bigger children, absolute support. Whatever your child's size, it needs to be confident, self-confident. It needs to be aware that it can reach its full potential. And the job of parents is to give the child enough confidence to do that, whatever its size.
So how can parents do that?
To begin with, I think that you see lots of adverts in the media. You'll see them in magazines. You'll see them on television. What I would do with my children when they were growing up, I'd say, you do realize this is a load of rubbish, don't you, when an advert for a weight loss company came on. And I wonder why they're only targeting bigger people. If they say they want you to be healthier, why aren't they targeting everyone? And I would talk to the kids about the fact that it's really, the bottom line is always they want your money. And as the boys got older, I was able to explain to them that these companies employ psychologists specifically to make you feel bad about your size. And I used to say, get mad about this, get angry about this, just be determined that you will not let them brainwash you. And if people habitually get these horrible women magazines into their home, which talk about the different kind of diets, on one page, it's really quite a dual message. On one page, it will be all sort of, we can be beautiful at any size. And then the next page, it will be the diet tips of the stars. I think that if you've got a girl and she's reading these magazines, you've really got to say, this is just to sell magazines, darling. This is not the truth. This isn't what happens. Those people put weight back on, just like everybody else does, because your body fights back. It's not a case of finding the right diet. It's a case of understanding what your body does and going with that and being healthy, whatever your size.
So, obviously, as you said, kids are exposed to messages about what bodies are acceptable, what bodies are attractive, what bodies are not okay in the media, whether it's, you know, television, magazine, movies, but also, as you said, it's school, by their peers. I also think about the toys.
Yes, indeed. Oh, of course, there's lots of problems with Barbie. I think that's, in America, they used to have Barbie bonfires. I don't think that's quite. I mean, I do agree that it's dangerous, but I don't think it's quite as dangerous as the constant messages all the time that bigger bodies are worse or unhealthier or more ugly than thinner bodies, it simply isn't true. I know many, many people who are bigger and they're beautiful. They don't have any problems finding dates or getting partners or anything like that. And you only have to look around you to see that it's simply not true that bigger people are unloved or ugly. It's simply not the case.
So we know that being exposed to these kinds of fat phobias and fat hatred are quite harmful for fat children. But I would imagine that they're also quite harmful for non-fat children as well, are they not?
Yes, I think our drive at the moment towards equating bigger bodies with poor health can give thinner kids the idea that just because they're thin, they're healthy. Now, the things that keep a person healthy is really good quality food, fresh vegetables, fruits, lean meats, and so on, if you're a meat eater, lean meats. And to keep your body healthy, to keep your blood circulating well and give your muscles in good condition, you need to take some form of exercise. Now, when I was writing Healthy Kids, Happy Kids, parents used to say to me, but my little boy is not sporty, he's not active, what do I do? But most children like party games. So you can play party games with your children and have a group of them round and play party games. And there's all sorts of things you can do. It doesn't have to be the 3-mile run or anything like that. It has to be something the child enjoys. And if this is a specific subject that your child enjoys, say botany, music, whatever, you can link that to some sort of form of exercise. I don't like that word exercise. I sort of prefer activity, because exercise sort of gives the impression of aerobics or Pilates or something like that. As long as your child is moving energetically, it can be anything. It can be swimming and cycling. It can be playing basketball, whatever it is. So those are the things that keep the human body healthy: good quality food and a fairly regular exercise. And most younger kids are active anyway. It's difficult for bigger kids, especially if you're very heavy. It's difficult for them to get as much exercise because it's tiring. And a child who will take a lot of exercise should really be very much complimented, because it's harder for them to do that than it is for a wiry, thin kid to run about. So whenever you see a bigger child, and I live quite near a school where they often do cross-country runs, and it's nearly always the bigger kids at the back. And I sort of think, well, the very fact that you took part in it is great, that you were so brave, you're so courageous. But I don't think anybody tells the kids that. I think you've got to tell your child, I understand what it's like for you, and you are being wonderful. Because sometimes when I hear from parents the things that their children go through at school, it's a wonder those kids ever go back into that situation that they know is just going to make their lives a misery day after day after day. Fat kids are so courageous.
So you talk a lot about the role of the parents and what they can do to perhaps combat some of these negative messages. Yeah. But what about the parents who themselves are the ones providing those negative messages?
Well, yes, I'm afraid that that's when Pennsylvania State University did a survey of children between 5 to 9 years old and discovered that 93% of their mothers reported using weight control strategies. Now, the other thing is that a lot of these children will go on to develop anorexia and bulimia, because it is now known that a lot of children who come from weight-conscious homes get the message quite early on in life, and then when they become sexually attractive, as it were, when they get to the age where they want to attract a partner or a date or something like that, they begin to see themselves as unattractive in that area. And that can lead to dieting. And what happens typically when you diet for weight loss, of course, is that you lose a little bit of weight and then it stops, because your body starts fighting back. So you cut down on the kilojoules even more, and you lose a little bit of weight, and then again your body starts fighting back and the weight goes back on. And the girls who become anorexic become really very obsessed with this, and so they're eating less and less and less. And when you eat less, it actually affects your brain. Your brain really needs about 26% fat every day just to keep itself going. So I'm not as you cut down on the foods, then you can find yourself thinking that you're fat when you're not. It affects all the brain processes. And a lot of these children who end up like this have got dieting mothers, or mothers who, perhaps even if they don't diet, will say things like, oh, did you see Jenny? She's lost 5 kilos. She looks great. Well, Jenny probably looked great before. So don't applaud weight loss as if it's a good thing. Turn your thinking towards being healthy, towards eating the right foods and making sure that your child feels confident about eating the right foods. There's lots of information, incidentally, in Healthy Kids, Happy Kids on how to get your kid to eat fruit and vegetables, which is another problem that parents used to come up with, that you couldn't get my child to eat broccoli. Well, there are ways and means. And Healthy Kids, Happy Kids is in the library, so is Largely Happy. Most libraries still have copies. So have a look in the back of Healthy Kids, Happy Kids, where there's lots of recipes and ideas to keep your child confident, to show you how to get you to eat vegetables, and so on and so forth.
Well, excellent, Linda. Thank you so much for coming on the show today.
You're welcome.
I think that your message is about raising healthy and happy kids.
Yeah.
In terms of what all parents, regardless of their size or their children's size, the steps that they can take, the ways that they can engage with their kids around things like food and exercise and bodies are beneficial for everyone.
Indeed they are, yes. This is why the message should be for everyone. It shouldn't be targeting fat kids in schools for health programs or exercise programs. Everybody could benefit from doing that.
Excellent. Well, we appreciate you coming on today.
You're very welcome. Thank you.
Bye. spotlight today is a piece by Melissa McEwen from Shakesville. Shakesville is a progressive feminist blog about politics, culture, social justice, cute things, and all that is in between. The piece is titled Proposed, and within it, Melissa puts forward something that she would like for you to consider. Quote, I would like to put forth the radical notion that if a fat person is fat by choice, it's okay. I'll give you a moment to sit with that idea, that it's okay for someone to choose to be fat, because it really is a radical notion. And, like other radical notions, it is both has the capacity and is likely to evoke visceral reactions of protest, like, but being fat is potentially unhealthy, and that's not okay. But if you give yourself a moment or two, you'll probably realize there are other potentially unhealthy things that people do, which you probably would argue in favor of allowing them to continue doing. It's more dangerous to ride in a car than be a pedestrian. But if a person capable of walking to the store wanted instead to hop in their car to pick up milk a mile away, you'd probably think that's okay, because hey, maybe they have a good reason for preferring to drive. Unquote. Part of what Melissa is highlighting is how tricky a concept health can be. What seems healthy to one person, say, restricting caloric intake to less than 1,200 calories a day, may seem unhealthy to another. She is also pointing out that our culture does not really seem that invested in caring about health issues outside of ones that are deemed socially unattractive or potentially immoral, smoking and fatness being two examples. The piece continues, quote, so maybe it's all right for you to think it's okay if someone chooses to be fat rather than thin. Because the thing is, holding in judgment people who are fat by choice doesn't make a whole lot of sense, given our general tolerance for all sorts of things that people do which carry with them risks to their health. And people are going to be fat or not fat, irrespective of your judgment about fat people. Letting go of fat hatred won't change anything, except, of course, to make the world a little bit better a place for its fat inhabitants. It can be a hatred that's hard to let go of, even for fat people, because letting go of that hatred and replacing it with acceptance can feel akin to giving fat people permission to be fat. But being in the position of feeling like permission is yours to give is a manifestation of privilege, and maybe it's all right to let that privilege go. Unquote. Issues of power and privilege are some of my favorite things to consider, both as an academic and a feminist and a fat activist. I appreciate the work that other people have done on issues of power or privilege, whether it's Peggy McIntosh's Unpacking the Invisible Knapsack, which looks at white privilege, or the many other lists of kinds of privilege, such as Christian privilege, straight privilege, and thin privilege that have popped up in its aftermath. There are quite a few blogs and quite a few theorists who spend time discussing privilege, how privilege is powerful, how it remains unnamed, how people within positions of privilege don't recognize their privilege and get quite upset when you make it known to them. Melissa in this post is dead on when she says that feeling like you're in a position to give permission to someone else, to allow it to be okay for a fat person to be fat, for a fat person to choose to be fat, feeling that you have that ability to do that is in itself a manifestation of privilege. And where does that privilege come from? It's probably an intersection of a lot of different things. Melissa continues on to discuss about drawing distinctions between good fatties and bad fatties. Now, for those of you who aren't familiar with these terms, good fatties and bad fatties are something that are often talked about within the fatosphere. So there's two kinds of good fatties. One kind of good fatty is a fat person who eats healthily and exercises regularly, ticks those boxes that are so important. The other type of good fatty is a fat person who is shameful about their weight and actively trying to lose weight. Now, the opposite of a good fatty is what is called a bad fatty. And like a good fatty, a bad fatty can be one of two different people. A bad fatty can be a fat person who does not always eat healthily and does not always exercise, therefore not ticking those two boxes that society say are so important. The other kind of bad fatty is the kind of bad fatty that I am, in the sense that I am not shameful about my weight, my body, or my fatness, and I'm also not actively trying to lose weight. It often seems that in certain circles or certain parts of society, good fatties are accepted, but bad fatties are not. People can understand a good fatty and can appreciate and possibly even take pity on a good fatty because they feel ashamed about their body and they're apologetic for their size and the space that they take up. Very rarely do they have the same sympathy or even empathy for someone who is a bad fatty, for someone who refuses to cower or apologize for who they are or their body size. Melissa proposes at the end of her piece, quote, "Maybe it's all right for you to treat fat people with dignity either way and let fat people sort out for themselves the business of their being fat," unquote. At the heart of this piece seems to be the very idea that someone's fatness, someone's body, has nothing to do with you, that you have no right or privilege or power to suggest how they should treat their bodies and to suggest that the decisions and choices that they want to make for their bodies are inappropriate. This is a position that I can get behind because while there may be people that I care about in my life or celebrities I admire that make choices regarding their bodies that I dislike, I appreciate that it is not my business to pass judgment or try to tell them to make different choices. Just as I do not want anyone, be they celebrity, politician, or family member or friend, to try to pass judgment on the decisions that I make for my body or tell me I should be making different decisions. Well, that's all the time that we have for today. Thanks for listening to Friend in Maryland. And remember that you can contact the show by emailing friendofmaryland@aol.com. Tune in next Wednesday at 6, only on Access Manawatu, 9:99 a.m. Closing out the show is the Top Twins with Untouchable Girls.